Hello and welcome to the Open Systems Media eCast Agile Car Development, 26262 Compliance, Continuous Integration, and Asset Management. I'm Kurt Schwader, your moderator, with today's speakers Mark Warren from Perforce, Yuri Wallach from Polarion, and Leonard Killen from Scania. Today's schedule consists of about 50 minutes of presentation material, leaving 10 minutes at the end of the hour for audience Q&A. Before we begin, I'd like to run down some important features of your viewing console. First is the Enlarge Slides button. This button will maximize the slides to fill your entire screen. The Download Slides allows you to download and print the slides if you'd like a hard copy to follow along with. The button labeled Forward to a Friend enables you to send an email to someone that will include a registration link to this eCast so they can also attend. The Ask a Question text box enables you to participate in today's event. You can simply type your question into the box and submit it using the Submit button. You can submit questions at any time during the presentations. We encourage you to do so early and often while you're looking at the material and the question is fresh in your mind. We'll address as many of these as we can during the closing Q&A, and if you have a question pertaining to the eCast operation itself, you can submit those too, and one of our technicians will be happy to respond to you during the eCast. Our presenters today are Mark Warren, Leonard Killen, and Yuri Wallach. Mark Warren is European Marketing Director for Perforce Software. It's used by thousands of organizations worldwide. With over 25 years of experience building and marketing software development and ALM tools, Mark has worked with many different industries looking to improve their product development processes. Leonard Killen, Scania IT and SCM specialist, working with methods and tools for Scania's software development organization. Perforce is at the center of Scania's SCM framework and continuous delivery, and it's the key practice used. Lean and agile principles are central to methods used for development of all parts of Scania trucks and buses, including a wide range of technologies and platforms such as Java, .NET, embedded software, database, and communications applications. Yuri Wallach is the VP of Product Management with Polarion. Yuri brings over 10 years of experience with software product management and engineering to Polarion, where he is responsible for the product roadmap and product management. His unique mix of technical acumen and business savvy enables him to translate market needs into enterprise-grade solutions that are proven to help Polarion customers accelerate collaboration, integrity, and innovation. Yuri holds a master's degree in mathematics from Charles University, Prague, Czech Republic. Mark will be kicking things off today. Mark?
Okay, thanks very much, Kurt. Today's conversation is going to be mostly about how modern development practices can be applied to component and vehicle building in the 21st century, looking particularly how you could use lessons learned in other industries, in particular agile development and continuous delivery, and bring those lessons learned to bear on the auto industry, and while still maintaining compliance with standards such as ISO 26262. And MISRA compliance and other standards that developers have to worry about these days. I'm going to provide some overview and background to the challenges in the marketplace that I'm hearing from our customers and we're working with on how they solve them. We're very lucky to have Lennart from Scania here who can talk about exactly how they're adopting agile and continuous delivery methods at Scania. And then we're going to wrap up with Yuri from Polarion talking a little bit more detail about how compliance can be maintained in the development process. Just a couple of very quick slides introducing Perforce to those of you that haven't come across us before. We are version management specialists. We've been around now for over 18 years, and we've been widely adopted in a variety of different industries because of our ability to handle a broad range, a broad spectrum of different content types. And I'll talk about how that's important as we go through this presentation. Most of the most innovative companies in the planet depend on Perforce. If you think about any industry sector, the leading brands in each one are absolutely committed to using Perforce and have done for many years. So enough company background. Let's talk about the market and the challenge that we're trying to address today. I think there's this nexus of four major driving forces that we need to think about here. And I apologize if this slide looks a little bit poorly formatted on your screen. Let's start with customer expectations. I think there's no doubt that customers have a much greater expectation of all of the systems that they interact with every day, whether it's their car or their television or their telephone. Ever since, perhaps you could say, the iPhone was first released, people have expectations about what they should get from modern technology, whether it's low cost, whether it's high function, whether it's frequent updates. Customer expectations are growing and growing. The days where putting out the minimum cost product probably aren't going to be able to carry you in a competitive world. And competition is a major driving force. Where many cars are equally really good, they all have four wheels, they all have engines and steering wheels, and they all get you from A to B pretty reliably, differentiation between manufacturers is really important. That's also true for differentiation between component suppliers. You've got to be able to show that you can react to customer requirements quickly, that you can react and lead in the competitive market. So competition has never been greater. In fact, ever since the kind of financial crash around year 2008 or so, I think we've seen an even greater hunger in manufacturers to be able to show that differentiation. They've managed to clear out a lot of baggage in terms of bad practice and maybe old technology, but they haven't really completed that process yet, and they know they have to innovate more quickly to be competitive. I mentioned cost here because cost is always a factor whenever any change is being considered. And really, cost comes in two flavors for me in this discussion. One is the cost of the building of a vehicle, the cost of the process, the cost of the people has to be managed and maintained at a low enough level to ensure a profitable business. But also, we're at the kind of tipping point that's really interesting in the technology that we're using as well. The days when high-performance computing was a very expensive business are behind us. We're seeing some incredibly powerful processors becoming available for systems builders, especially in the automotive business, that really couldn't have been considered 5 or 10 years ago. I'll talk a little bit about NVIDIA later, and they talk about their CUDA architecture and their Tegra K1 chips being the equivalent of a supercomputer in terms of processing power only a few years ago, but now they're available for a few dollars, essentially, for each part. And you have that kind of affordable power on which to build your systems and build your components. That gives you a lot of flexibility for the future. And then the really boring nexus that's going on here, element to this nexus, is compliance. There are increasing numbers of standards that need to be adopted. ISO 26262 is a good example. 19494 is another. But equally, as you look across national markets, you'll also see local legislation being adopted. And that's only going to get more complicated going forward. Think about the changes that many countries are having to consider now for autonomous or self-driving vehicles. Working out liability in a car that's in theory driving itself is proving challenging for a lot of people, and that's only going to drive the requirements for increased safety and increased record keeping ever upwards, and more and more traceability and accountability will be required. So lots of change going on, lots of really interesting opportunities opening up, and there is no golden or silver bullet to all of this, but I think that there are a few things that a good systems designer, systems builder could use to prepare yourselves for that future. I talk about agility. How quickly can you retool? How quickly can you modernize and change your development practices to accommodate with a change that's going on around you? Tied closely to that is, if you're going to have to react to change very quickly, then you're going to have to assume you're going to be making frequent releases. And that's something we see in all industries. The drive from long release cycles to short iterations is prevalent everywhere. And then finally, openness. And openness in two ways. I'll talk about this some more later. Openness in terms of reusing components from other suppliers, so bringing in OEM components, bringing in open source components, and these days open source can mean hardware as well as software, but also in the tooling that's being used as well, making sure that you are using up-to-date and modern tooling, and often that is being driven by the open source community. I'm going to drill into each one of those in a little bit more detail and explore the issues there. So let's start with agility. I think it's pretty fair to say we would agree that the future is unpredictable. I don't think any, you know, it's a brave person that would bet a lot of their living on how the future is going to work out in the next 5 to 10 years. Now, that's true, and it's been very brave people like Elon Musk, maybe, when he created Tesla, that's made a big bet on creating an entirely new auto manufacturer. You know, the cost of entry to the auto business is pretty high, but I don't think that's going to remain quite the same forever. And if you look down at the component level, the idea that people can start to design systems to be embedded in the future car, I think that the barriers to entry there are reducing as well as we get more common standards for communications within the vehicle, more standard libraries that are being used, then actually there will be a lot of new entrants, and I don't think we've seen the end of that yet. The important thing is how quickly, how much effort will it take your processes, your tools, and your people to adopt and embrace these new challenges. The ultimate objective is to be able to continually release updates, or at least at some point along your life cycle, even if they, you know, they have to wait for a model update to actually get to a customer's hand. But ultimately, it will be how quickly can you get a change from a concept or a requirement into a vehicle or into a customer's hand. For some people, for Tesla again, that's actually quite a short period. You know, they can roll out changes to the infotainment system over the air. They can even roll out safety changes over the air. Now, it could be a while before every vehicle can do that, but I think that they are showing the way for many companies in the future. The approach that's being adopted widely across at least the software development world, and increasingly in hardware as well, is this move from traditional waterfall processes where a lot of time is spent building up requirements and designing models, and then having a development phase and then a QA and testing phase and hardening phase and then eventually releasing over a very long period. They've moved through a period of using agile methods with short sprints and short time-boxed release windows to now continuous releases. The quote here from Forrester is, the days where a successful organization could release software once every 12 to 18 months are over. You know, and in fact, I think we're seeing the same thing in the auto industry as well. The model year updates may come along, you know, pretty much every year with cosmetic changes, but actually more substantial changes are being adopted in that same kind of ongoing time frame. In fact, a key element of making that possible is having small increments of new functionality so that you're not doing big bang releases. You actually can manage the risk by managing the payload in each of those releases. A typical pipeline for any product might go through some high-level, what looks like waterfall, but actually you're trying to get that path from requirement to deployment as short as possible. In the software industry, we've seen tools adopted like continuous integration, so that every change creates a potential release. So a build of the software gets created, and also tests are run. You know, for hardware manufacture, it might be less obvious how that works. But in fact, these days with hardware design and great simulators and emulators available, actually, we're not that far away. But the important thing is that you can automate as much as possible. And there are some key factors that you need to be able to automate. One is being willing to accept such a change in the process and the culture, which may be difficult for very traditional businesses, but there are some technology challenges there as well. In particular, it's really hard to automate if you're not doing this frequently enough. It's not something you want to do just once every year. You want to be releasing every week or every month if possible. Now, that's not going to work necessarily for large-scale chassis changes, but it might work when you're talking about the GPS navigation system. You could release the software or the firmware for a sensor more frequently than you are now. We call this sometimes paced layering. Work out in your entire product, whether it's hardware, firmware, applications, documentation even, what is the right pace of release for each of those elements, and then tune your processes and your build systems along with that. And these systems are getting to be more and more complicated. Think about all of the pieces that have to be brought together to create a reusable component. It starts with requirements. You have to say that, yeah, this windscreen wiper assembly is going to comprise of some blade that's going to sweep across the windscreen. It's going to have a motor. It's going to have some sensors to control what happens when there's a blockage or when the motor stops working. You're going to roll those into some kind of model. You're going to start building some hardware. You're probably going to have some firmware to control the sensors and the motors involved. There might be some application software, for example, to actually show the state of the wipers, which setting they're in. That might be shown on some kind of screen inside the car. There might be an application to react to a button being pressed to turn the wipers on. Obviously, all that source code that goes into making that firmware application code, that's some C source code somewhere probably. You're going to have some executables, some link libraries or whatever that's going to go in there. There's documentation that goes into the handbook. There might be documentation that you have to show that you've completed all your necessary test runs. You might have some graphics that go on that screen to show the wipers are on or off. And, of course, there'll be test plans and test data, and the list goes on and on. And that's just a simple-ish, what looks like a simple component, like a wiper blade assembly. You know, think about what happens if you have a self-driving car. The complexity is huge. Now, you've got lots of different kinds of assets being managed. That means you've got lots of different kinds of contributors in the project. You've probably got people that are good at writing documentation. You've got people that are good at designing hardware. You've got people that are good at writing software. You've got people that are good at writing test plans. They all have their own tool sets and their own processes. And if they're all in different silos, it's really hard to bring everything together and to have a consistent platform that can be automated for that future automation and continuous delivery of updates. And think about what it takes to administer all those different silos. If you haven't got a single source of truth, then you're creating complexity and cost, and that's never a good thing. I talked about one of the drivers being openness, and I'm thinking about that in two ways. One is the growing plethora of kind of standards for the car as a platform. You've got vendors like Apple extending their mobile devices into the cockpit through initiatives like CarPlay. We've got initiatives largely driven by Google, which may be a little bit more open with the Open Automotive Alliance, and there are some others out there. And at the moment, manufacturers are being asked to place a bet on which one of these is going to be most successful. And it's almost a binary choice whether people are going to go down some kind of Google route or they're going to go down an Apple route or maybe a Microsoft route. But you never know. In 3 or 5 years' time, there may be another significant player that needs to be adopted. What that says is you will need to build flexibility and be able to change in a reasonable time frame, not just kind of tool up for 20 years because that's too long a period. Looking inside your organization at how you build these components, these applications, these vehicles, look at how you're adopting open source or reusable libraries. There may be standard libraries such as Qt for graphics, but development tools as well. We're seeing a broadening adoption of Git, which is a distributed version control system, because developers like the way that they can create lightweight branches, they can work offline, they can manage the history of the changes before they share them with the rest of the team. And that's really good. It really helps with fast turnaround, highly productive development. But it lacks a lot of the enterprise readiness that you really need, especially in a regulated or compliancy-aware environment where we're talking about 26262. If a developer can rewrite history, that's probably not going to help you with your compliance going forward. More importantly, these people are working on your valuable intellectual property, your IP. You want that to be in a secure and well-managed environment, and that's not something that DVCS naturally lends itself to. This is why the perforce approach is something we call hybrid version control. We adopt and embrace Git as a great way of developers working, but we provide a managed master repository that all other contributors can contribute to as well, whether they're documenters or artists or the chip designers. The perforce platform can handle very large files, and when we talk large, we're talking about many gigabytes, and we have many examples of that. And they can work side by side with the Git developers. So we would recommend that you have some kind of common repository that all contributors can use, and not just some. And that may not be true with the tools that you're currently using today. A good example of a component manufacturer that is absolutely doing this is NVIDIA. And you may know them not just for their in-car components, but obviously for PC graphics boards, motherboards. They're very prevalent in the healthcare and the pharmaceutical research. But they've got a growing practice in vehicle technology. I talked about their Tegra chipset earlier on. The images I have here, and if you've got a big enough screen, you may be able to see them, talk to their virtual cockpit, their electronic dashboard tools. So not only are they building the LCD screens or building the chips that drive the LCD screens in the dashboard, but they're also building software tools to help you design that new electronic dashboard. Very exciting stuff. Now, they've been using Perforce for, 15 years now. They've got a huge repository. The point I'm making here is, with 327 plus terabytes of data and 1.3 billion revisions of files, the point is that it's a touchstone, it's a proof point that Perforce can handle these very large models, these very large chip designs that you may be working with. The other point here that I wanted to make was somewhere over 88% of all NVIDIA employees use Perforce. So that means that they're not talking just about their chip designers, not just about their software developers, but also the rest of the business is able to use Perforce for managing their IP, whether that's sales contracts or documentation or HR contracts. They're all being managed and the IP being protected within Perforce. So to wrap up, the three key takeaways I would say from this to make yourself ready for agile component updates and the future is review your existing tools and processes. If you're using tools that are pretty much 10 years or more over and haven't older and haven't seen any significant updates in the last 2 years or so, then they probably aren't fit for purpose when you're looking at a very agile or very high rate of iteration in your development releases. Take a look at your entire tool stack and see what you're using. Secondly, automate. Automate as much as possible. If you're relying on human beings, they're not very good at mechanical or repetitive tasks. Machines are much better than that. But to be able to automate, you really need a single source of truth that allows you to have this common repository that can version everything. And on that, you can build the automation. You've got this visibility, and you can then do your compliance checking very easily as well because you've got a single repository to validate. And Yuri's going to talk about that a little bit later on. But right now I'm going to hand over to Leonard from Scania, and he can talk about the adoption of agile methods within the Scania organization. So over to you, Leonard.
Thank you, Mark. Yes, I'm Leonard at Scania. And first, just a few words about Scania, the company. Scania is a worldwide provider of transport solutions. Let's see. There we have the slide. And our main products are heavy trucks and heavy buses. Increasingly important is also all types of services around these products: training, assistance, vehicle service, and financial services. The amount of dedicated software included in these products themselves, as well as in the services, are rapidly increasing. Software is already just as important as the traditional hardware products. Manufacturing of Scania products has been based on lean principles for decades. Concepts such as continuous improvement, build quality in, flow orientation, and the elimination of waste are fundamental for the Scania way of working. The trend during the last few years is that also software and service development adopts lean principles. This fits perfectly well with the Scania way. Within software development, the lean concepts lead us to practices such as continuous delivery, extensive automation, agile methods, and the use of a common versioning repository. One challenge within the automotive industry compared to many other industries is the wide range of different types of software we have to provide. Database software, embedded software, mobile apps, simulation models, and also many different development platforms such as Java.NET, Oracle Forms, just to mention a few. And as Mark, you said previously, you have to consider all of these might have different paces of change. All are using our software development project, and all have to be supported for as long as our products are still on the market, typically many years or even decades. To illustrate how we use the lean way of working, and specifically the concept of continuous delivery, we will look at an example. This is a specific system of the Scania product, connected services. All new vehicles have the possibility of always being connected using wireless communication. The system includes embedded software on the vehicle side, and all types of data such as position, fuel, driving, and engine status are recorded. The server side includes software for storage of data, web portals, and interfaces to a lot of other systems and integrations. And the system also includes mobile apps to access data. The key concept for the software development project here is continuous delivery. All changes that are made to the system implementation are checked in on the common versioning repository based on Perforce. The changes are immediately run to a deployment pipeline that performs building, unit testing, and deployment to production-like environment. And also high-level testing like system testing and performance testing is performed as part of the automated deployment pipeline. Every change to the system implementation gives a potentially production deployable version of the system. We can here see all the steps that the updated version of the system are run through. The stages of testing that the potentially releasable system version will be subject to is divided into four stages. We call it the bronze stage, silver, gold, and platinum stage. When a system version has gone through the whole pipeline and reached the platinum level, it's considered a production deployable release. We do not automatically deploy to production, but the release is stored for possible production deploy whenever the business wants it. The heart of the deployment pipeline is the continuous integration engine. We use Perforce with Streams as the common versioning repository and Jenkins as the conductor of all the steps building up the pipeline. Just as important as the technical implementation of the continuous integration engine, there's a way of thinking within a development team, or a culture, I think Mark called it. All team members have to be aware that all changes they do might potentially go into production release. Only then can the deployment pipeline be a way to ensure the quality of the product. And an important aspect of the way of working includes these practices. Every commit should build the main line on the integration machine. And in order to do that, we have to keep the builds fast. We use massive parallelization by a pool of build machines to reduce the time for builds. And we have to maintain a single source repository. Version everything, as Mark said. And automation. Automate the build and automate the testing. Make the build self-testing. Everyone should commit to the mainline at least once a day. We might create release branches, but that's typically done in a way that they are never updated again from the from the main line, but it's just for a certain release. And we might also at times create development branches, but that would be more or less for experimentation and development that is not considered to be going into the main line again. So all major development efforts are done on a common main line. And tests should be done on a clonal production environment. So the test environment should mirror the production environment, not only regarding the software itself, but also configuration and capacity and test data and database and so on. And of course, we have to make it easy for anyone to get the latest executable. So we store all the executable in a common repository. And everyone should be able to see what's happening. We often use lamps to illustrate the status of the latest build. That is, should be mounted so that everybody on immediately sees it. And automate also the deployment. Should have, when they deploy to test environment and the deploy to production should be the same way, done the same way and without manual steps. Just automated. So finally, this is a simplified illustration of the tools set up that we use. All activities within the project can be traced in our issue tracking system Jira, and all changes to the product are versioned in Perforce. At the heart of the integration framework, Perforce is interfaced and used by a wide range of different IDEs like Eclipse and Visual Studio that the developers use. Build, test, and deploy automation tools and the different stages of the deployment pipeline all connect before using various APIs and by dedicated plugins. For example, Jenkins that I mentioned earlier. So this is my view of how we do it. And I think I hand over to Jiri Valek, get Polarion now.
Hello, everybody. Thank you, Leonard. So before I start, let me very quickly introduce Polarion Software. Polarion Software is a leading innovator in application lifecycle management solutions since our first product release in 2004. It's 100% based browser web-based solution with one single unified artifacts repository. And the reason we speak on today's webinar is that we have a large customer base working in so-called mechatronics area, doing both software and hardware development together. And many of them are on the transition from the waterfall to the agile methodology. You've heard today how important is it in these days to react to a change to stay competitive. Agile is being proved to help organizations to embrace a change even late in the development cycle. But what kind of the changes are we actually speaking about? In reality, Agile is actually making the number of functional changes lower. So through the process that is set up to accept the change anytime, you end up with the product that needs to be modified less, speaking about functional changes. Of course, your plans are changing constantly. Of course, you are adding features, enhancements. But a change on the plan is very different to a change of something that was already done. How is this possible? It is the continuous backlog prioritization that ensures that each sprint you work and concentrate your effort on something that the customer or product owner consider most important. Early but also frequent product reviews results into adjusted user stories or work packages in the backlog as well, all with the help of continuous integration and continuous testing. These agile and lean principles and practices ensure that you do need to change, you do not need to change the existing functions that much. This sounds great. There's really a common understanding that Agile helps you deliver your products faster and better. So where is actually the problem? The software projects are getting more complex every year. You can read here about 20 million lines of code just for multimedia system. Other customers report about exponential growth of the software project. We see that the complexity of such projects are underestimated. Just the basic principles, basic Agile principles are applied, and the projects fail, and Agile is considered as not applicable. For complex projects, you have to extend the basic Agile projects definition. You need supportive documentation to manage the complexity and ensure the consistency of your product. To highlight some differences between requirements and user stories or some people call them work packages, are great to describe the dynamics of the project, the increments. It helps the development team really to understand what and why is being done. But you can more or less discard them when they are marked as done. The specifications, on the other hand, need to be maintained when done for the project lifecycle. These two entities should be considered as complementary rather than just one replace the other. Looking on the process itself to understand the role of component specification documents, the primary input for the sprint is clearly the product or release backlog with user stories on the top that are well-prepared, granular, small and estimated, well-written. And the product component specifications are being just linked and referred from those backlog items, and it helps the R&D team to keep the product integrity. So one of the sprint deliverables is definitely the potentially shippable product at the end of every sprint. This is very key, but it is also important that the updated product documentation is considered as essential outcome of the sprint. This is what we meant when speaking about component specifications being maintained through the application lifecycle. Complexity of your project definitely make it hard time for you to set up a right and efficient collaboration, but also for us as an Aon solution provider. Very often the difference between making a use case easy or hard to perform results into being able or not to able to perform such use case. For projects with 20 million lines of code, we see an average about 50,000 requirements. And these requirements are very often connected with design elements, with design items, for example, in MATLAB Simulink or software UML models in Enterprise Architect, or the source code in the version control management such as Perforce. Ability to access all these artifacts directly by following the links in your web browser enables you to successfully mitigate the risks, comparing to analyzing the data separately. Speaking about regulatory compliance and Agile, Pilar and ALM was actually certified by TÜV Nord for ISO 26262 as a trusted tool. And we were told by TÜV Nord that we were actually the first Agile-driven company that has passed this certification. And our shared experience is that the standards do not actually require the waterfall-like process. They do not require when the documentation should be gathered or written, but that is actually available, so you can actually demonstrate that the software units fulfill the software specification and do not contain the undesired functionality. It's required that it requires the verification scenarios to be documented and test results traced to requirements. So every line of code has to be traced to requirements and design items. This is the reason why we announced an integration between Polarion and Perforce to set up source code change traceability in case the customers are using both Polarion and Perforce version control management system. Uh, So in the rest of the presentation, let me also speak about continuous integration and continuous verification. The continuous integration is presented to the public typical in the presented way. The developer writes code, he or she commits changes, this triggers a continuous integration build, and the software component is compiled and integrated with other components, and the automated tests are compiled and executed. As a result, we receive an email if the application can be successfully compiled and the tests pass or not. From my point of view, this is a very undervalued demonstration of the continuous integration value. To give you more insight on that, the version control management trigger is, of course, a very important hook to start the build activity. Whenever the code is committed to the build is executed. It is essential to get the feedback as soon as possible, and that's why we highlight here that just the core tests are actually executed here. Very often it is not possible to execute all the tests. Simply it takes too much time, especially when we think about executing the performance and load tests. One approach is to have multiple stages and several branches as suggested by Leonard, and of course it's possible to do it this way. But the other possible solution is to have the verification and validation activities linked to the affected user story or affected work package workflow. So the work package is first marked as draft and is accepted by developers, and it's in progress and then implemented. And after that, the build is actually triggered and compiles the application and executes all the tests. If it is succeeded, it passes the build for manual verification. So what is the difference on this manual verification activity and the agile practice that testers should sit with the developers soon enough to provide continuous quality feedback to the development? The biggest difference is that verifying each change, each addition, doesn't actually cover the overall story validation. It is always important to support the continuous quality assurance feedback by the final verification and validation of the story, both by executing all the regression tests and final user story validation by the product owner. Why do we actually care that much about what tests and when are executed? We care about it because there is a clear dependency between the cost, this is the time we pay to fix an issue, and the moment when the issue was actually fixed. The later it is, the more time you spend. The dependency is exponential. Because of that, we should be very careful about making wise decisions when the tests are executed, and finding a balance is pretty difficult. This is the biggest objective of the continuous integration and continuous verification process that spans over both automated and also manual testing. Let me also show you how our customer, Fujitsu Semiconductor Europe, has organized the source code quality assurance as presented on our user conference. So Fujitsu is the same as many other organizations. They do not rely on one single vendor of quality assurance tools. We see that the continuous integration and testing also includes other elements such as static source code analysis or code metrics. All the results are then imported into Polaren and transparently available to all the stakeholders. It is not only to give a proof that the verification and verification results were tracked and provided to regulatory bodies, but also to simplify the access to the results and speed up the process. It is a big difference if you receive an email or if the task appears in your task list, possibly linked with the user story that caused the issue. This might save even several days comparing to situations that the email had to be manually processed. The continuous integration and continuous testing process with Polaren is set up in a way that there is one central place for overall quality assurance process. There is the same instant processing for all the test results, all the test issues. And the process is always closely coupled with the user story workflow. So at the end, we can guarantee that the story was well tested, verified, and validated without any delays. To give some more highlights about Polaren solutions, I would just list three of them. It's transparency, ease of use, and efficiency. And that's how I would like to finish my part, and we can go to the Q&A session.
Great. Thank you very much. We are now to the Q&A portion of the event, and I again ask to the audience, you can continue to ask the questions even as we're doing the Q&A, so feel free to do that. We've got a number of good questions here. Let's start with Leonard. Great question here. For the embedded software in your system, how do you manage continuous testing and continuous integration when all developers likely don't have access to the end system, like the embedded hardware? How do you handle test automation for embedded hardware where there are so many configuration combinations?
Yes, that's a great question. And for the example that I had, I have to say that we have not come that far with automation, total automation, when it comes to embedded software like in some other parts. So that's a tricky thing. But I think you can never expect to go all the way with automated testing when it comes to embedded software. But what you do is set up these stages. So maybe the first stage testing could be done on an emulated environment. And then the next stage, of course, we have built up a complete vehicle in the lab. But then to that stage, you don't get every change to the system will not go that far. And then in the end, you will always need the manual testing step, extensive manual testing in the end before you take anything into production.
Right.
So the thing is more complicated when you dealing with the embedded hardware than the other types of software.
Right. Okay. Great. Mark, another good question here. How can you deal with the long-term planning? Do business plans feed into this environment? Can this be a direct, can it tree from a business plan?
Yeah. I have to say, that's also a really good question, because these are the tricky parts of any kind of agile workflow and the culture changes we've all talked about to some degree. Yuri talked about the idea of the backlog of user stories, the requirements, and continually managing that backlog, and that's a key capability. The two things that you have to try and balance here is, when you are working in an agile way and you planning out a sprint or a time-boxed piece of work, you may not get all of the functions that the high-level business plan may need in one release. So you have to plan out those releases to break down the big requirements into small usable chunks. That's tricky in itself. The upside to that, though, is that when you get to the end of a period, whether that's 1 month, 1 week, whatever your period might be, you're always going back and saying, does the original requirement still make sense? So that way you don't spend 6 months or a year building something and then find out actually the market's moved on or we didn't really understand the requirement correctly in the first place. So this is one of the hardest things for any organization to adopt, whether you're a pure software company or you're a hardware and software company like a vehicle manufacturer, is the business has to change the way it's thinking about moving from very big bang releases to small increments. Now, as I said before, different components, different systems will move at different paces. So, yeah, a chassis redesign will be a 5 or 10 year project. But actually changing the user interface on the infotainment system might be a 6 month project, and you might break that down into 3 releases of 2 months each. With some idea of that, at the end of the 6 months, you're getting towards something you started at, but you realize that over time, that something you were aiming at might have moved, but what you're ending up with is something that's more appropriate to what the customer is asking for or more relevant to the market than perhaps you could have guessed at the beginning. So, yeah, it's difficult. It's one of those cultural change things that we talk about. It's one of those things that needs to be accepted across the business before you can be really successful with an agile or continuous process.
Right, and one of the benefits, I think, at the end of each iteration, you're reviewing for the stakeholders, right? So these are the people that understand the business plan, know where they're going, and if they see if they see a deviation from the intention of the business plan, they can see it one iteration into it, as opposed to, you know, 1 year into many man years of development or something.
Absolutely right, and I think Leonard mentioned this as well with the feedback. You know, is that fast feedback is one of these key things. So the earlier you can get something into a testing system, or even better, earlier into a customer's hands to do some testing and get their feedback and say, yeah, that's great, or I'd like that, but right. then you can adjust your plans as you're going. Without making that, as you say, very expensive mistake in a long project.
Right, exactly. So, Yuri, what does it mean? Oh, does somebody else have
If I can just comment this as well, I think there are more agile practice that helps to do the strategic planning, and but you also need to actually adopt your release planning a bit. So, for example, what we find out is that it's very efficient if you actually work on the features sequentially and less in parallel, because, I mean, if you really plan the epics in parallel, you actually receive the feedback later. So it's better, I mean, to reduce the number of in-progress work to really to the number of teams you are actually having in your agile organization. Or if you have your product owners really constantly asking what is the minimal marketable feature scope, and you really release the feature as soon as possible. So all these agile techniques can help you with the business plans and strategic planning. On the other hand, what is also very important is that the Agile is not only about the R&D team, but it also spans up to the business and the executive level. So it's the organization change. It's not just the change of the development team.
I see, right. There's another question here for you, Yuri. What does it mean that your solution is marked as trusted tool for ISO 26262 for us as a user?
Okay, good. Good question. Actually, I mean, when you need to develop, I mean, the software for automotive safety, you need to have the not just the product certified, but also you have to follow the process according to the standard. And also you need to certify the working environment. And we have standardized the set of use cases how a typical automotive manufacturer work to develop software, so you don't need to certify our solution again. You can get our certification and pass it when you perform your own certification. And by the way, I mean, we are the first full ALM solution that gets this stamp.
Okay. Leonard, what's the biggest challenges you have experienced when shifting into a continuous delivery way of working?
Okay, yes. A major challenge has been to find the time to work with automation and deployment pipeline when customers constantly demand new product features. I think it's important to set off a certain percentage of the time to work with improvements that can they could ensure quality and delivery in the long run. So that's how we do continuous improvements in small steps.
I see. Okay. Mark, and maybe Leonard and Yuri, you can follow up on this question as well with your experience. If the customer does not support agile development, does it make sense to use the method? Because agile depends on stakeholders and incremental releases and people nodding their heads that this is the feature and, move on to the next increment.
Yeah, this is that cultural question again, and how broad, we've all spoken about this. It does need top to bottom, side to side embracing of the agile approach. Oftentimes you might find a single team starts to do some kind of agile, but it's embedded in some kind of larger waterfall process, so you end up with it. People talk about scrumfall or kind of hybrid environments, and you get some benefit from that, but you only really see the whole benefit once everybody is moving to a common cadence and everybody's working in a common style. it may well need a good champion to come in and drive through some of those walls and say, yeah, we know that this is different and it might be painful at first, but there are some real benefits that we're going to get out of this in terms of better customer service, shorter release cycles, better competitiveness and all those things. But I don't think anybody would advocate for waterfall per se, except in some very restricted environments, and everybody is trying to get to agile. It's a question of how you can do that with least disruption, I guess, in your day-to-day work, because you've got lots of that to do, and that's kind of what Leonard's just been talking about as well.
Right. Yuri, do you have any experience with working with external customers or your clients working with external customers that are not agile? Is it easy to get these people to say, listen, every few weeks we're going to have some features to show you, so maybe you can get them to participate in the agile style without actually being an agile company that you're selling to?
I mean, these are all great questions. So first, I think that even if you don't have a connection to your real customers, there should be always who represent a customer voice. And the reason is simple. I think that simply the teams produce better results if they really understand why the features needs to be developed. So having someone who represents a customer, who represents a virtual customer at a team, just simply boosts the team performance. In reality, I mean, even for us as a Polarion, as I said, we follow Agile, and I do play a role of a customer for our R&D team. For our mechatronics customers, I think that it's maybe not as important that it is a real customer, but really to make sure that there is this frequent validation by the stakeholders that are really responsible to for the product to be successful on the market. Because, I mean, the later this validation comes, the more changes you might really reach far to happen in the product. So I wouldn't necessarily stick to the definition of a customer as a final user, but as someone who really understands what and why needs to be done to have the product successful on the market.
Right, right. And Leonard?
Yes, I agree completely with what Yuri said. That it's important to have a close cooperation with the customer, and that, I think, is a key thing. But in all cases, but then it depends who's the customer. It's necessarily not the end customer, but it's somebody representing the customer. And typically it's the product owner, and that's a very important role in the product, to be the product owner, to have good knowledge of what the customers could need, and that's closely integrated with the development.
I see. Yeah, we're running out of time. Unfortunately, we'll ask Mark one final question here. There's a question about, like you said, doing tool sets, modernizing them, to move forward toward Agile, it takes cultural changes and budgets. You know, how do you get the executive manager to buy in and drive this kind of change? And how much, is this a large expense? I guess you've just got to prove the return on investment.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, Yuri just talked about some of this as well, getting people on board to say, you will get better features more quickly. That's a message that resonates at the highest level with even with the finance director. If you say to the CFO, we can deliver more products more quickly and it'll be better for the customer, and it'll be cheaper because we'll have less failures and we'll have less rework, that sounds really good. They can buy into that. I think the other thing is, go back to the beginning of all this. Where did Lean and Kanban and all these methods come from? And I think Leonard mentioned this. This came from innovative auto manufacturers in the first place in the production line. And the kind of things that were pioneered by Toyota 20, 30 years ago. So at a more practical level, we can kind of understand this process is trying to modernize and continually improve. You can't stand still. And a tool that was right, and there's some customers in the auto business I've been talking to recently, they built a tool set 20 years ago and they know it's not fit for purpose today. And it's the same would be true if you were looking at some kind of cutting machine that was 20 years old. It's probably not right for what you need to do today. And at all levels, you can see that agile and continuous delivery is, you either move forward and adopt it, or you're going to be falling backwards.
Right. Well, very good. Unfortunately, we've reached the end of the eCast time slot today. Thank you very much, Mark, Leonard, and Yuri, for sharing your insights on agile car development. We at Open Systems Media, Perforce, Scania, and Polarion want to thank all of you, the audience, for attending today and contributing excellent questions. This eCast will be posted online at the URL shown on your screen within 24 hours, and an audio-only podcast version will also be made available there. You can do a web search with the keywords embedded, space, e-cast, and find all of Open Systems Media eCasts available for download as MP3s. Thank you for attending, and have a great day.